Now, back to more Steve Cochran.
WGN Chicago.
808, we're a couple of months away from Iowa, and we want to have every candidate have an opportunity to talk to you, not just for the people who listen in Iowa every day, but for the people of Chicago and the people all over the country that listen. And Governor Jeb Bush joins us now. You can follow him on all forms of social media, at Jeb Bush. And good morning, Governor.
Good morning, Steve. How are you doing?
Nice to talk to you. You know, I've had the pleasure of meeting and spending a little bit of time with both of your parents, and I think they're both terrific folks, and I wonder how they're doing health-wise.
They are both a little frail, given the fact they're 91 and 90, but they're in good spirits and they're in good shape.
Good to hear. And if you don't mind, I have no interest in discussing candidate Trump. I think we spend too much time asking you and other candidates what's going on with Trump when I'd prefer you have an opportunity to tell the voters what you're going to do.
Absolutely. I'm happy to do that. Let's have a conversation.
Let's start with ISIS. ISIS, of course, starts out as what appears to be an offshoot of Al-Qaeda and is now blown up to be the biggest threat on the planet. If you're in the White House, what do you do that's different?
Well, I laid out what I would do 3 months ago at the Reagan Library, long before the Paris shooting. And it would be first to recognize that for what it is, this is a threat, a global threat. This is Islamic terrorism. These are radicals that want to destroy Western civilization. And we should, they've declared war on us, and we should have a strategy to take them out, not to contain them. And that would require American leadership by garnering the support of the Arab nations and European nations principally, to support a local force, the remnants of the Syrian Free Army, where American leadership is not just in the air, but on the ground as well. I don't think we could do this without American leadership, without embedding our troops in Iraq, with the Iraqi military, with directly supporting the Kurds in Iraq, and re-engaging with the Sunni tribal leaders in Iraq that was successful, that partnership was successful in bringing about the end of Al-Qaeda in Iraq. And as it relates to Syria, we need safe zones. The refugee issue, which is a huge tragedy for literally 4 million people uprooted from in Syria.
Sure, it's a nightmare.
In a country of 23 million, we need to have safe zones there and a no-fly zone where we're serious about dealing both with Assad and ISIS.
Can we do it without Russia's help, and should we have Russia's help, and how do you get there with Putin?
You can't do it with Russia's help unless they abandon their support of Assad and change their relationship with Iran. We have a dual threat in Syria, the most brutal regime in the world that has killed over 200,000 innocent people, supported by two countries in the world, Iran and Russia. And I don't see how we can expect Russia to change its feathers at this point. If they could, fantastic, but I don't see it. I don't see it happening. I think we have to deal with dealing with Assad in a dramatically different way and make sure that we deal with Russia from strength, not weakness. The idea that we wouldn't talk to Russia is ludicrous in my mind.
Right.
But at the same time, dealing with them in such a position of weakness only emboldens Putin.
One of the main concerns that Putin seems to have is the security of their large naval base there. Is there a way to secure that? In other words, that he wants something in exchange for cooperation. And if we could do it without him, great, but his cooperation would help. Or are you just seeing this as competing agendas and we need to peacefully get along but not try to militarily do something together?
Yeah, unless Russia changes its path, which right now is to prop up the Assad regime. I mean, look, they're not hitting ISIS in the air. They're hitting the remnants of the Syria Free Army, which we're supporting. That should be a pretty clear signal of what their strategic interests are. The fact that they have a strong naval presence there is because we pulled back. And re-engaging, I think, is the first step for creating an environment where the rest of the Arab world would feel compelled to join up. They don't think that we have their back. We don't think we're serious about dealing with both Assad and ISIS. You're not going to get any support. And we can't do this alone.
When you have spent time in Iowa, regardless of what people say, that the Bush campaign is focused on New Hampshire, blah, blah, blah. Look, you want everybody. You're running for president.
And yeah, exactly.
The people that are listening in Iowa have had a chance to meet you and spend time with you. What are their concerns? What are they talking to you about?
The same as in every part of the country. I'd say the deficit and the debt and now this concern about national security are the two pillars. How can we create a growing economy and deal with our budget, structural budget deficits, and how do we create a more secure America? And that's the issue. I mean, and agriculture issues are more important perhaps in Iowa than they are in New Hampshire. New Hampshire has issues related to drug abuse that are serious, and so there's specific local issues. But the two big issues are, how do we create a growing economy to deal with our budget deficit and growing income for Americans, and how do we create a more secure America?
Andrea, say hi to the governor.
Governor, good morning. Wanted to ask you, you know, as long as you're talking about issues on a local level, more hitting close to home, I want to ask you about race relations. And on a national level, obviously hitting very close to home in Chicago here over the weekend, there seems to be a lack of trust between many residents and the police department. I want to know what you think should be done on a national level. Is there more funding? Should there be more dialogue on race relations?
There should be more dialogue. I don't know. Funding isn't necessarily the issue here. There's quite a bit of federal support for local law enforcement. The idea of cameras could be helpful. I don't think it ought to be mandated how they use them from Washington. We're a bottom-up country, and I think the best approaches, the places that are most successful, the ones where trust is the first priority each and every day. Today we have a situation where law enforcement officers are literally worried about doing their jobs, being engaged in community policing. And they're withdrawing, and it's going to create insecurity rather than security in crime-ridden neighborhoods. So I think the president can play a role in talking in a way that tries to bring people together. But ultimately, these are local issues that need to be worked out each and every day at the local level.
One of the frustrating things that I run into all the time from folks is the fact that the president can't work with Congress and Congress can't work with the president. And Ronald Reagan is cited often by all the Republican candidates as somebody that worked well with Tip O'Neill. Well, great. That's 30 years ago. When is the nonsense going to stop where if a Republican hears a Democrat open their mouth, it's a bad idea and vice versa? Because to me, the only way we move forward in this country is if the president finds a way to work with Congress and peacefully disagrees and comes to a mediation, a solution.
Look, it's not just Reagan and Tip O'Neill. It was my dad with Democrats. It was President Clinton with Republicans. It was my brother with Democrats. We've now reached this gridlock that is quite dangerous to our democracy. I think you start with the premise that people that don't agree with you aren't necessarily bad people or that they have bad motives. They just might be wrong. And you have a dialogue with them to try to force consensus. There's no trust at all. Talking about lack of trust, this is maybe where Washington needs to focus. There's no trust at all between the parties in Washington. Even when they agree, they can't figure out a way to agree. I'll give you an example, criminal justice reform. There's a growing movement on the right to look at minimum mandatory sentences at the federal level. There's a lot of nonviolent offenders in our prisons, and President Obama agrees with that. Rather than go to Congress to try to forge consensus to move forward with a change in the law, he's basically using the clemency process to release people and not engage in a way that would be meaningful. At least at a minimum, when there's an agreement, there ought to be a pause. No one pushes the pause button and get on with it. You start with the premise that people aren't bad people because they disagree with you. You can forge consensus. And it's got to be the first priority of the next president. It's not a sign of weakness to actually get things done. Governors know how to do this, by and large. This is what governors do. They have to, there's a requirement to balance the budget. There's a requirement. You know, we have, in our case, 60 days to get the legislature in and out. So there's a lot of talent and skill from outside of Washington that can be brought to bear to Washington, I think, to begin to fix the culture.
Yeah, you've got a wonderful family. You've got a nice life. You've got a great legacy of when you were governor of Florida. Why in God's name do you want this job?
Because I think we can fix the things that are broken in Washington to create high sustained economic growth and to restore America's leadership in the world. And others may be able to do this, but I think I have the skill sets to make it happen. And it's an incredible privilege to be running. I do it with a lot of joy and a lot of excitement. Today I'm off to Iowa, and I'm going to spend 2.5 days there, then on to Minnesota, then to Washington, D.C. for a big speech, and then heading back home. So I'm gone 6 days a week. I love it. I love giving people some sense that things can get better. I love learning from people in these town hall meetings that I do. It's a true blessing for me.
I don't know, how your family does it, because you certainly can't sit down at Thanksgiving and have a conversation about politics, because your dad and your brother have had the job. I would want their advice, But then by the same token, maybe you don't want to hear it.
So, well, I wasn't with them for Thanksgiving. I was with them the weekend before, and my dad's not really in the advice business anymore, but my brother is, and I take all the advice I can get from him. He's the last Republican to have won. He won twice, and he knows a lot more about how to do this than anybody that's running right now. So I do seek out his advice, and he gives good advice.
Got another debate coming up, and this doesn't appear to be your favorite thing to do. What do you do to make it?
Come on, Steve.
Now, you and I both know it's not your favorite thing to do. Having said that, the last debate, you seem to find your path a little more, whatever that means. What do you want to do in the next one? Well, I mean, obviously leave the impression you want to leave, but how does it play out differently? Or do you just take it as it goes at night with proper preparation?
That's exactly the way to do it. It's not really a debate when you have 10 or 12 people on the stage. It's more of a performance. And I'm training myself to say what I want to say, not necessarily respond to whatever the question is. And so the message, I think, the mission in this particular case is to answer the question, but then speak about what's on my mind and in my heart about the aspirations of people. Tell stories. Talk about why I can beat Hillary Clinton, which I think is ultimately going to be one of the big deciders as we get closer to the primaries and caucuses. We can talk all we want, but in order to serve and solve problems, we have to win. And I think I have the record and the ability to beat Hillary Clinton.
Listen, Governor, I appreciate
against her with an untested person that doesn't have a record. That's just, I think they'll scrape the bark off of whoever that is.
Scrape the bark off. Here's a phrase I haven't heard in a while. Listen, I know how busy you are, and you know what a big deal this radio station is throughout the Midwest. So I hope we can keep these conversations going, headed towards Iowa and beyond. But I really appreciate your time this morning.
You bet. I love it. Take care. I'll see you. Hope to see you maybe in the studio, too.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. That's Governor Jeb Bush from Florida. Jeb2016.com is the website for the candidate. And as I said, I still would love to have Cruz on, even though that conversation might not be as friendly. The other candidates we've had Rand Paul on. We had on Governor Walker before he stepped out. We've had on a bunch of folks.
Santorum.
Santorum before. Is he still in?
No.
I think he's on? Okay. But of the mainline guys, we've gone through most of them. Governor Christie's scheduled to appear in all of it. I just think it's important for people to hear it, not just, again, for the people that listen in Iowa every day, but for people in general.